You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Erin Yankee. This weekend on the solstice, Judith Arcana transitioned to the ancestors. I don't know anything about formal memorials, but I started my morning by going to her page on the KBOO website and listening to her voice. She was the host of Poetry and Everything for about 3.5 years, but before that she was a guest on so many shows. We'll hear some excerpts from them. We'll start with Judith reading her own work on Poetry and Everything.
Welcome to KBOO's Poetry and Everything. I'm Judith Arcana, your host. I'm going to be reading my own work, and as a really overt expression of reading my own work, I'm going to begin with some poems about my people. This first one is called Nostalgic Smoking and Drinking Poem. My family smoked and drank, talking with lit cigarettes in the corners of their mouths, squinting through rising smoke, blowing it from front room to kitchen to porch. Some of them sent quavering rings drifting down to us, children on the floor who poked fingers through the small ones, put faces forward to be framed by the big ones. No one thought it was good for them, their Camels and Luckies burning, scarring edges of card tables, but no one knew how really bad it was. Uncles and aunts, cousins in the army, down at the shop and behind the counter, grandfathers gave us empty boxes when they sucked on gold cigars, fat like the wrists of their grandchildren, or skinny brown sticks they held in their teeth, like the sugar cubes they strained black tea through, staining their strong teeth. After they drank schnapps, they drank vodka, they drank vishnik they made in the basement, they drank sweet purple grape wine on holidays, praising a god they stopped believing in before they lived here, before they came here from there, smoking and drinking on the boat. This one is called Dead Young Mother. My mother died when I was just a baby, so I look for her with the sweet hope of an infant. I look inside the memories of her brothers, the photographs in her album, pasted down in careful little corners. Those sharp little corners make me see the invisible frame. I look for her in my face, my hair, my dreams, my laugh or lips, my smile with teeth. I look for her, too, in the old cemetery. That's where she was last seen, lying down under words, stone-heavy words. If I find her, though, we won't know what to say. She's too young, younger than my grown son. Her eyes are closed over his eyes' gray-blue light. Her hair waves just like mine, its color before silver. And my dad called 86. Today is my father's birthday. He's 86 and thinking maybe he'll kill himself. 86 himself. He says he wishes there was a button so he could push it. They should have a button, he says. You could just push when you're ready to go. He doesn't know this is his birthday. He's not expecting a birthday. He doesn't expect. He's always surprised to hear my voice on the phone, my voice at the door. He knows me, I think. I believe I give it away, calling him Daddy, saying my own name. I am the daughter. The sons are my brothers, playing tricks like mine, saying their names, wanting to be known. Getting what we can. When he scatters ideas, we rush in like pigeons under the bench in the park where an old man sits brushing crumbs from his jacket. And then, of course, another generation entirely, my own kid. This one's called Anecdotal Evidence of the Effects of Women's Liberation on Male Children. We are looking out the windows at the city, the mountain. We see the sky all over us. He says, Mom, your apartment is surrounded by parking lots. Then my son, who lives in L.A., a place where no one stops driving long enough to park, opens his silver laptop to show me an experiment in cyber magic. As he clicks his way there, I remember him saying, "I know I've been your experiment." The man from Los Angeles didn't know yet. We're all experiments. Everybody's looking for results, conclusions. Everybody's guessing. Everybody's testing, one, two, testing. Nobody ever knows how it'll come out. I made him out of what I had to work with then. Malts, ribs, pizza, the occasional apple, maybe coleslaw with carrots. I was cooking him for 9 months the year A Clockwork Orange was new, and people started using the word sexism. When he was done, we went to school, changing our major, biology to sociology. When my son goes to movies, sits in the dark with Americans watching men hurt women, he gets sick. He wants to leave when men hit women. He says, pushing out through glass doors into California sunshine, "This is my mother's fault. She raised me, so I can't stand this. Can't just sit there like a normal person."
I first knew of Judith before meeting her as a member of the Abortion Counseling Service of Women's Liberation, better known as Jane. It was not a collective. Here's Judith as a guest on Positively Revolting Talk Radio on April 8th, 2016, giving a very, very short history of Jane. First, you'll hear Ani giving an introduction.
I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning we are talking about reproductive justice. We are talking about women's reproductive freedoms and choices are ever more under attack in all various ways. And to help us with this discussion this morning, we are thrilled to be joined with Judith Arcana. She is a writer, poet. Many of her stories, her poems, her essays, her work revolve around reproductive justice and women's choices. Judith, thank you ever so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Longtime listeners to the show, it's not a surprise to hear that I have worked at the Feminist Women's Health Center here in Portland. And some of the heroes that we had at the clinic as we were learning women's health care and the importance of always making sure that women's choices were safeguarded and protected was the work of the Janes in Chicago. Come to find out, you know, years later, there's this wonderful writer in our area, and you were a Jane. And so I wanted to just sort of start out with that experience, first of all, for people that might not know, what is that?
Okay. I want to say in front, though, I used to use the past tense, as you just did. And then another Jane, a very dear friend of mine, said, no, once a Jane, always a Jane. So now I'm training myself to reverse that and say, yes, I am a Jane. I started in the fall of 1970, but that's, you know, like so many things that started earlier in life, they're still on. So for folks, as Ani just said, who may not know, in Chicago in the late 60s and early 70s, a small group of women created what was essentially an underground illegal operation that turned into a clinic, starting out with referrals, finding people who would do abortions, helping women get to those people, and then over time, actually learning to do abortion procedures ourselves. One of our best guys, and of course, no one will be surprised to know that they were guys. He taught us. He taught one or two Janes. I still remember some of the things he said to me because it was huge, you know, this thing that we had undertaken. And then those of us who were learning from him taught others. And eventually he retired. The mob was after him anyway. You know, both the police and the mob in every city in the United States want a cut of anything that's illegal. whether it's drugs or during Prohibition, booze, you know, whatever it is, certainly abortion services when and where abortion's illegal. And so our guy, this wonderful man who was so skilled and treated the women so decently, was always having to defend himself against those two large entities that wanted a cut of the action. So he was, in a sense, happy to teach us and move on. Also, he liked what we were doing, and he liked us, and we liked him. So we were very, very lucky to find him. And then we went on as a self-sustaining, self-teaching organization, all underground, mind you. And then somewhere between 2 and 4 months after the Roe decision in January of 73, the service dissolved itself. Some of the women who had begun with Jane work went on to become medical professionals of one sort or another. I myself thought that I might become a midwife, but you know, once an English major, always an English major. I was fated to be the writer I am. But for a while, I did a certain amount of that work, teaching and so on. So there's a tiny, tiny history of a deep thing.
Judith brought everything into her poetry, including her politics. Here she is again on Poetry and Everything.
Now I'm going to read you a fabulous sentence, which I did not write, written by one of the great ones of our time and this country, Toni Morrison, who said, "It seems to me that the best art is political, and you ought to make it irrevocably political and unquestionably beautiful at the same time." I read that some years back in, I think it was in an interview, collection of interviews with Ms. Morrison, and immediately said, yes, yes, that is so true. And of course, immediately wrote it down everywhere. I think I even have it somewhere on my website. And now I've just read it to you. So here we go with some poems that are decidedly and overtly political. This one is dedicated to Lanny Jo Lee. This one's called Sealed Birth Records Challenged in Court. In the old days, everything was secret. You went away to what they called a home, or you stayed inside your own, hiding your belly when you knew you could not keep it. All the signs were danger signs, breasts heavy with yellow cream, darkening nipples, widening hips, desires for food, sex, sleep, all growing with the child, while you stood wide-footed, moving side to side like a broad-bottomed boat, riding the long tide, going out without you. Salty water shifting with a small internal moon, until eclipse, when they took the child away, and you'd never see it, never know its name, never know if the eyes darkened, mind sharpened, curious about you, if they talked about you, if they said you were first, said you held the baby first. Lanny Jo has shown at the Clinton Street on several occasions some excellent documentary films, and I would also remind folks to watch the fiction film, Philomena, about adoption as it has been practiced as an industry for far too long. These next two actually are from a collection of mine called What If Your Mother, which is a book that includes poems and monologues about what I like to call motherhood concerns, and not the kind you usually find, let's say, in Hallmark cards. That one, for instance, the adoption poem, and now these next two. This one's called You Don't Know. You think I didn't care about that baby, didn't wonder if we'd like each other when she turned 14. Didn't think he'd follow anywhere his older brother went. You think we take them out like gangsters, disappear them like generals. You don't know how it works then, do you? You don't know what sits on both sides of the scale, what it means to decide what I got and what I gave that baby I didn't have, baby who couldn't make me laugh, applesauce upside down on her head, couldn't make me cry, taking his first step right off the porch. You don't even know that this is not about regret. You don't know one blessed, I say blessed thing about it. And another one, actually, the title poem from the collection I just alluded to. What if your mother? Sometimes when you talk to them in argument, they say, what if your mother had an abortion? And then I say, she did, because it's true. Only that one wasn't me. It was somebody else. Nobody but my mother ever knew that baby. But they mean me. The people who say it mean, what if she aborted me? Like that's hard to answer. They're so stupid. Because what if she miscarried or gave me away? What if I drowned at the beach when I was 3? What if she loved someone else, not my dad? Then I wouldn't be here either. What if? What if? What's the point of asking this phony question? All you could ever answer is, then everything would be different, wouldn't it? One thing sure, I wouldn't be standing here talking to some jerk who asked me that dumb question. I wouldn't be mad at my mother for doing it, would I? I think you just have to tell these people, get real, that's not what it's all about.
Ken Jones is often heard on KBOO. He writes, produces, and performs, does author interviews, hosts news and live broadcasts, and currently produces Jonesy, which broadcasts every second and fourth Thursday of the month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Here, Judith and Ken are celebrating Grace Paley's life and work 12 years after her death.
On today's show, we discuss the life and work of the late Grace Paley, one of the great masters of the short story form and a great poet, essayist, and activist as well. And there's no one better to talk Grace with than our guest this morning, Judith Arcana, author of the book Grace Paley's Life Stories. Judith, like Grace, writes poems, stories, and essays. Her work includes the poetry collections Announcements from the Planetarium, What If Your Mother, Fourth Period English, The Parachute Jump Effect, and Here from Somewhere Else, which won the 2015 Turtle Island Quarterly Editor's Choice Chapbook Award. Her story, soon to be a major motion picture, won the first Minerva Rising Prose Prize and was published as a chapbook. A longtime teacher of literature, writing, and women's studies, Judith also volunteered as a Jane, a member of the Chicago Underground Service that helped more than 11,000 women get safe, illegal abortions before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on Roe v. Wade in January of 1973. KBOO listeners might know Judith from her monthly poetry show, Poetry and Everything. Judith, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for inviting me.
Now, Judith, we'll be focusing on Grace Paley for the whole hour of the show this morning, and you'll be reading for us a sampling of her work, including one incredible short story. We can call today's show Talking Grace, but since we both have an almost religious regard for her, maybe saying Grace.
Oh, I like it.
What's the short answer you give people who might not know Grace and her work, if people like that exist?
Well, I'm sure people like that exist, although I don't run into them as often as those who do know. Grace was skilled in a variety of forms as a writer, poetry, essay, short story. And the short story as a form, as a genre, as a work of art in word art was her forte, and she was truly brilliant in the short story form. Moreover, because she was a constant, lifelong political activist, well, there were people who only know her through her politics, and people who only know her from the literary perspective. And when they meet, which I see frequently, they're both, oh, really? Which is very exciting, I think, to discover, oh, she was a goddess in various forms all at once. Yes, it's true.
And you cover both in your book. The book itself was actually initially published in 1993 and has its origins back in 1984 when you started grad school. At that time, you decided that you wanted to write a biography.
Yes.
And you wanted to write about a woman you admired and could learn from. So why did you pick Grace?
Well, I had already read everything she had published so far. Because when
you,
I started,
you were a big fan.
I was a big fan of her stories. I hadn't even initially known about the other stuff, but as soon as I was, you know, done with the stories, I thought more, and it turned out there were these poems and essays as well coming along. And then, because my own first two books relied on a lot of interviewing, I started thinking about what to do with my skill and experience as an interviewer. What's next? What's next? I was asking myself. And I thought, well, what if I just, instead of asking generic questions about relationships, the first two books are about family relationships, women's lives in families, etc. And I thought, well, that would be a biography, a literary biography. And then when I decided to go back to school at the age of 41, I thought, okay, well, I'll have to write a dissertation. These people know what literary biography is. And then, this is just an amazing thing, I made a very tiny list, literally three names. Grace was number one. And within a month of starting school in the fall of 1984, I saw a poster that said that Grace Paley was coming to the Chicago area.
Wow. And
yeah, it was incredible.
It was like a destiny.
That's just the way I think about it. Yes, it was meant to happen. So anyway, I went. I had never seen her. I had never heard her actual voice, only the voice, which, as you know, is an extraordinary presence on the page. So I went and I thought, okay, if I think she's great, this is it. I'm going to ask her. And she was great. And so I went and got in line with the others afterwards. They wanted autographs. I wanted her life. And, I said, I want to write a book about you. At first she said no. Then I wrote to her. We talked on the phone. I sent her copies of my first two books so she should know that I knew how to write, you know. And we started working together on the interviews and so on and so forth. She gave me entree to her people, which was incredibly generous.
I would have been terrified to go up to somebody I admired that much and ask them, I'd like to write a book about you. And
well, like I said, the first thing she said was no. But, oh no, she said, the very first thing she said was, that's nice, honey. And I said, no,
which,
really.
A little bit dismissive. But
for sure. And then I said, no, I really mean it. And then this correspondence began back and forth.
But you had the courage to even ask the question, to broach it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was there for, after all. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, in the introduction, Judith, I wonder if you would read that for us. There's a paragraph that kind of explains your approach to the book.
I got to admit, in the main, my attitude now is a sort of a bent knee to who we were all those years ago, especially since she's no longer living and I miss her so much. But anyway, okay, so I think you mean this first paragraph of the introduction. So here it is, folks. By translating her life into art, a writer not only saves, in Grace Paley's terms, her own life, but offers others the revelation of meaning in that life. That offering and its integral revelation are at the core of this work, which is a biographical reading of a strongly autobiographical writer. A separation of the work from the life of an artist in biographical study is always artificial and arbitrary, performed with difficulty and resulting in necessarily false distinctions. We usually make that separation for ease of handling, accepting the partition as appropriate to academic and marketing enterprises. Grace Paley is a writer whose life and work resist separation, demanding an integrated analysis of her family, her political work, and her writing.
Next up, here's Judith as a guest on The Underground, hosted by the KBOO Youth Collective in 2018. She was talking about Fourth Period English, a book of poems examining immigration through the voices of high school students. You'll first hear Maeve giving an introduction to the segment.
You are listening to The Underground on KBOO, and our theme is advice. And next up, an interview fitting with our theme, hosted by Quinn.
All right, welcome to The Underground. I am Quinn, and today I'm interviewing writer Judith Arcana. We're here to talk about her book, Fourth Period English. Thank you for being here, Judith.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right, so can you tell us a little bit about the content of Fourth Period English?
I can tell you. I could tell you even more, but I will try to keep it to a little. Fourth Period English is a collection of poems. Each one is a monologue, and almost all of the people speaking are high school students.
Are these characters based off of real people that you know?
not literally, but they certainly were inspired by some real people that I was knowing some years back, the folks who have come to be called in the United States the Dreamers, young people who were either brought here at a very young age by their parents or who are the children of immigrants who came without papers. And I met a group of these folks when the documentary film Papers was being made. I was totally knocked out by them. They were so smart. They were so charming. And of course, politically, they were endangered and valuable. And I cared about them a lot.
So what made you decide to focus on immigration from a specifically teenage or high school perspective?
Well, I was, of course, as anyone who could care would be, worried about these young people. Their situation still, after all this time, is extremely precarious. And also for me, someone who in another life, many, 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 many years ago, was a high school teacher, it just sort of came together, you know.
What else are you working on right now?
What else am I working on right now? A couple projects. My biography of the writer and activist Grace Paley is coming back into print, so I'm working on revisions for that. And also some stories and poems about abortion and contraception and reproductive justice concerns, and some films and other forms that deal with those issues that I'm involved with. I'm working on those. It's not a summer vacation summer, you know. I don't mean to make it sound like a complaint. This is my work, and I do it on purpose. And those are the things that, in fact, are coming around. Yeah.
We'll end with Judith reading her own work.
That's what I do most of the time now. I age. I realize we all do that lifelong, but you know how you just don't notice sometimes your own personal habits and then someone points them out? This is what happens with aging. This one's called "The Old Woman is Pissed Off Again." Because, again, her actual self has been denied. With a smile, of course. Denial, offered as a favor, a kindness, a sweetness, the speaker assuming she'll be flattered to hear that who she is, the old woman, what she is, an old woman, is not really, not now, not here, who or what she is. Oh no, not even close, says the cashier when the old woman asks for the elder discount on her grocery bill. The cashier smiles as those words slap the old woman, sliding her credit card along the sensitive rim of the register computer that will, or will not, approve of her. They always smile when they do this. She can see what they expect. She will accept denial, take erasure as the gift they mean it to be. They're giving her a gift, saving her from the awfulness of her own true life. And they want her to smile about it, join up, and pretend makeup, hair dye, cosmetic surgery. Pretend she's not who she really is, a woman, grown old, out in the world, buying radishes, cereal, soap, cookies. The old woman joins the riot crones. When people say you must be able to laugh at yourself, they really mean you should laugh at what they think you are, what they want to call you. If they think old women are ugly and foolish, you must laugh at that. You are to smile in recognition of their accurate observation. If you don't, won't do what they want, be what they want, you have to be ready to fight. Fight to be real. You'll need friends to laugh with when something is funny. Join up. We have t-shirts.
I was proud to call Judith a friend and will treasure all the times I got to laugh with her about the absurdities of the world and plot on how to change it. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Erin Yankee.
Thanks for listening, folks. Remember, support your local independent bookstores, independent reading series, and independent radio. And that's it, folks. Good night.